from the committee? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Sharon, maybe you and Mr. Rudin.
Is that the one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a handout. It's a resolution from the City of St. Peter. If someone would be so kind as to distribute this.
Yeah, Senator Sharon, we see these turnbacks quite often. And that's about all that we require is make sure the local jurisdictions are on board with the proposal.
That, in essence, is all that we're here about. And I don't need to speak to this. It's something. It is a turnback of some highways of the City of St. Peter in an area that's now really closed off to the public because it's part of the state hospital. And you have to go through a gate and a security system in order to have access to these roads. And so it's a perfectly reasonable turnback, and the City of St. Peter is in support.
And Mr. Rudin, I take it that MnDOT is also on board?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. No problems with this at all?
No, Mr. Chair. We anticipate transferring to the city about $50,000 for work on one of the highways. There's some additional work to be done on the other turnback. We're going to probably create a new access onto Highway 169 in St. Peter.
Okay, great. Senator Jungbauer has moved Senate File 3161 to be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair?
Before that, Senator Skoy.
I'm sorry. I know these are routine, but I just had a question about it. Do they get to reuse these miles anywhere else, or do they just lose these route miles, or isn't that a factor in it?
Mr. Rudin, how many miles of road is this?
They're actually both quite small. One is slightly over 1 mile, and the other is just less than a half a mile. And typically, turnbacks do go onto the county state aid highway system or the municipal state aid street system. Mm-hmm. But that's really up to the county or the city. And in this case, because it's such a situation just serving the state hospital, I don't know if the city will make the choice to put it on the state aid system.
Okay, thank you.
Then Senator Jungbauer moves that Senate File 3161 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor and placed on the consent calendar. That's normally what we do with turnbacks. There's very little discussion, so. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Does prevail.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, you have 3372.
I do, and I would request respectfully, Mr. Chair, if I could have a few extra minutes for my testifier to show up.
Oh, sure. That's not a problem.
That's stressful.
I think so.
All right. Senate File 2925, Senator Saltzman.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here with Senate File 2925, which requires a chief engineer position be an appointed deputy commissioner position within MnDOT. Too often over the past year, we have had to ask who is making decisions within this highly technical department in our state. And there have been concerns as to who is in the upper management of MnDOT, who has the technical expertise that we believe is needed to make these decisions. I believe we've talked about a level of competency or else a lack of it within the highest office of this department. We must be assured that we as a legislative body have access to people who have the ability to make these decisions, and that is why I have brought this file forward. I have with me today Mr. Martini, who is with the Professional Engineers Society, and before he testifies, I want to refer you to an organizational chart which you have from MnDOT It is a bit dated, but it notes on this map where all the engineers are at within the department. And it's very important to note that above this long line here, the horizontal line, there is no technical expertise in the engineering field in the upper executive offices. So I think that that's really what this bill is all about, is that we have a number of very extremely qualified people within MnDOT, but to whom are they reporting? And how are these decisions being made? So at this time, Mr. Martini, I'd like to ask you to testify.
Mr. Martini, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is David Martini. I'm here today to represent both myself and the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers, of which I'm a member, and I serve on the board of directors. And as an MSP board member, I've had discussions over the past several months regarding the relatively recent change in leadership philosophy at MnDOT to eliminate the position of chief engineer. And the discussions I've been a part of center around the concern that licensed professional engineers are being further removed from the top leadership positions at MnDOT. To consider whether or not MnDOT should be required to have a licensed professional engineer hold the position of deputy commissioner slash chief engineer, I think there are several things that should be considered. First of all, Minnesota statute specifies that professional engineers be licensed in order to safeguard life, health, and safety, and to promote the public welfare. As a professional engineer, I know that's something I take very seriously, and I believe my colleagues do as well. Licensure brings with it an obligation to adhere to a code of ethics, which brings with it accountability to the public, other professionals, my employer, and the Minnesota Board of Licensure. Second of all, by education, experience, and training that's required to remain licensed, engineers have an understanding how policy and financial decisions affect the construction and maintenance of Minnesota's infrastructure. I think this can be particularly beneficial in times of emergency because engineers can speak both from a public relations and an engineering perspective to convey important messages to the public. Engineers can also improve communication between technical staff, both in and outside of the department. Also, I believe that professional engineers are most qualified to determine what other positions within the department should be held by other licensed professional engineers to ensure that engineering decisions and policies are being made by individuals who are both qualified and accountable. In summary, I'd like to leave you with the following points. State board laws and rules regarding responsible charge suggest that the individual having direct control over engineering work for the state be a licensed professional engineer. To give you an idea of how other states are organized, 11 states currently have a professional engineer serving as DOT commissioner. Also, the American Association of State and Highway Transportation Officials, which is more commonly known as ASHTO, has a standing committee on highways, which is made up of 52 members, which represent each state, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Of those 52 members, 48 members are licensed professional engineers. Currently, there's one position that's vacant, one position that I'm unsure of whether or not it's an engineer or not, that being Puerto Rico, and there's two positions that are held by non-professional engineers. One of those positions is the District of Columbia. The other one is Minnesota. So in closing, the last point I'd like to make is just as the Attorney General is required to be an attorney, I believe it's equally appropriate that the person in responsible charge of MnDOT be a licensed professional engineer. With that, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts with you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we were held these joint House and Senate hearings after the bridge collapse, and there were a number of MnDOT district managers there, and the question was asked about a chief engineer, and they said we have no chief engineer and that we've decided to do it differently. And so I was very surprised at that, too. So I think that this is very timely legislation. And could you just repeat again that the 11 states have their commissioner of transportation are engineers, but what was that other group you were talking about?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Martini.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. The American Association of State Highway and transportation officials, which is more.
Yeah, I'll get a copy of that.
Asheville, it's a big green book that they put out. It's made up of several committees, representatives of all the states, and as I mentioned, District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, which sets policies and state transportation departments in policies and standards, those sorts of things. They have one of their committees is Standing Committees on Highways. Standing Committee on Highways, excuse me. That is a 52-member committee typically made up of the top transportation officials representing each of those states or each of those members. And that currently 48 of those members are licensed professional engineers. Minnesota is one of two positions that currently is not an engineer.
Further discussion?
Something else, Mr. Chair, if I can just refer you to the Code of Ethics for it's in your packet as well. And I think that what's important here also is that engineers basically take a Code of Ethics when they become a PE. And it's important to note that under Rules of Practice number 3 that they shall only issue public statements in an objective and truthful manner. And I'm not implying that someone has not. It's just that we need to have someone at the very top of this agency, near the top of this agency, that we can call on that has a very clear responsibility of reporting to us. It's important to put public safety over politics. And too often when we've looked at projects where we've had concerns about and asked who was at the table making these decisions, we were not assured that an engineer was at the table and really serving the public safety when those decisions were made. And this is really to ensure us. Had there been had this position been filled earlier or that we had known, we may not be here today. But sometimes when common sense does not prevail, the legislature has to come forward and really demand that this kind of expertise is at the highest level of this department.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, just a technical thing. Both of my colleagues on each side noted that Senator Sharon is listed. Is this a reviser's problem, or is Senator Saltzman really the author of 2925?
2925, Senator Saltzman is the chief author.
But not on the bill that's printed out before us.
Right.
That's correct. That was a change that was made on the Senate floor a couple days ago.
Okay, there was a it started out that way. Okay. Yeah. But Mr. Chairman, I was trying to reflect as to whether we've ever, there are other departments that are dealing with health and safety related issues. Mm-hmm. Have we ever dictated specific qualifications? Sometimes there's tradition. Do we require that the mm-hmm. Department of Health have a chief physician or?
I believe the commissioner of the Department of Health is a doctor, medical doctor.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that's always been the case.
Probably not.
But that was at the commissioner level. But you're not talking about the commissioner level. You're dealing with a deputy here. Mm-hmm. But I just wondered if we'd ever been that prescriptive in any other area that was of importance. Mm-hmm.
Well, Senator Olson, I'd bring you back to the org chart, and we may not be, we may not have to be as prescriptive, and I understand that the district engineers have a lot of sway at MnDOT, and so do people like Mr. Arsenault and Mr. Dorgan, but don't you think with somebody with these qualifications, with this type of code of ethics, which ensures that they hold paramount the safety, health, and welfare of the public, perform services only in areas of their competence, act for each employer or client as faithful agents or trustees, avoid deceptive acts, conduct themselves honorably, respectfully, ethically, I believe that we need somebody in the upper levels of management that is a professional engineer. Believe that. Senator Saltzman.
And to that same point, Mr. Chair, that when the legislature created the Department of Highways in 1917, the deputy commissioner was required to be an engineer. And probably over time, as you know, the Department of Transportation was formed, maybe that was dropped. But originally, that was something that the legislature felt was very important to the infrastructure of this state. So we're kind of going back and looking at what has worked for this state well. And again, ensuring that that technical expertise and someone who serves the public safety is at the top of this agency or near the top of this agency. This is not requiring that, you know, the commissioner is an engineer, but that the commissioner has access, direct access, to a person who will serve the public safety in this specific capacity.
Mr. Chair, I think the last engineer in the commissioner's role was probably Dick Braun. And then I think we had a lawyer, and then we had a lobbyist for the truckers, and then we had a Methodist minister, and up to the most recent one. So I'm not sure how I feel. Part of it is what the role and what the authority is that's given in the administrative structure to the deputy, and I'm not sure about that. If they stand in the stead of the commissioner, that I don't know in terms of that decision making process. And some of that is probably determined by the organization under any given executive branch as to whether, when you say the highest level, I consider assistant commissioners as pretty high level, and you got 3 out of 5 of them as professional engineers. It's not as if they're being ignored. I'm asking this innocently. I don't know what the deputy commissioner's role is in relation to that. Process.
Senator, 3 of the 5, those are not assistant. Those are not assistant commissioners that you're talking about at that level.
So, Mr. Chairman, there are no assistant commissioners in this administrative charge.
Assistant Senator Olson, the assistant to the commissioner is right over here, and that's Bob McFarland. That position is currently vacant because he's the acting commissioner.
So
these positions down here are not the assistants. They're the heads of these departments.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman,
I don't believe they call them assistant commissioners.
Mr. Chairman, in the current law, they're allowed to have 4 in the unclassified service as assistant commissioner, assistant to the commissioner, or personal secretary levels. So you're saying that this administration has no assistant commissioners. They have an
assistant. That's not what I said.
And a deputy.
Senator, are you looking at the org chart?
Uh-huh.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory. It says assistant to the commissioner, Bob McFarland. And then there's government affairs, communications, civil rights, audit. And then right in the middle is commissioner, deputy commissioner. And then all these people down here are division directors, whether it's operations division or state aid or engineering. They're division directors. They're not assistants.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'm only pointing out is that while the current law appears to authorize 4 such positions, the current chart only shows that there are 2, an assistant commissioner and a deputy commissioner, if none of these others are designated as assistant commissioner. Doesn't exactly look like an overload of administration at the top. Is that kind of what you're critical of? That there needs to be more? But
well, there needs to be, Senator Olson.
Senator Salzman.
We are looking at the skills of these people, and that within those positions that the deputy commissioner needs to have the degree of a professional engineer, needs to be certified.
Yeah, no,
That's the piece. I don't think that we're changing, and I think it allows for flexibility because it allows for an assistant or assistant to a personal secretary. It leaves that open. We're not dictating that. But what we're saying is that the deputy commissioner needs to serve as the chief engineer for the agency and needs to have this certification. And there's continues to be flexibility in how they then would manage the rest of this department. It's not trying to do that.
So, well, Mr. Chair and Senator Salzman, given the lightness of the apparent appointments of assistants in the unclassified section in the current administration, it leaves open. I'd be interested in if the current acting commissioner knows the answer to that, whether in their administrative decision making, whether they actually elevated the role of these division managers in the light of the fact that they don't have assistant commissioners. It's kind of an interesting. I'd never paid that close attention to this, but it's. I guess I don't know whether they aren't using professional engineers, given that there are three at that level in that decision-making process, or if it's all left to the one person that is at that deputy commissioner level.
Perhaps if MnDOT is here, Mr. Chair, they'd like to provide us with that.
Is there somebody here from MnDOT that wants to? Mr. Rudin. And while Mr. Rudin comes up, here's Chapter 144.011, Department of Health. The commissioner shall be selected without regard to political affiliation, but with regard to ability and experience in matters of public health. So we were prescriptive in one way, but we did not require a PhD in health.
That's the health commissioner?
Yes. Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple handouts, if I could have those distributed.
Okay.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just give the committee a little bit on the history of the chief engineer role at MnDOT. The title,
Mr. Chairman, could you, all of you, pull the... I've got a stuffed head, and I'm having a hard time hearing you. If you could pull the mics closer to you, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, in Mr. Rudin's case, we need to turn the volume up a little bit.
Yes, well.
He's very soft-spoken.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'll try to speak up a little bit. The title of chief engineer first appeared in the 1918 report of the Commissioner of Highways of Minnesota, and the title at that time was deputy commissioner and chief engineer. The title first assistant commissioner and chief engineer appeared on an org chart in 1923 and 24. That title seemed to be relatively consistent until 1956, when the assistant commissioner of highways also served in the role of chief engineer. And they were two separate, there were two separate positions in 1956. In 1962, an old MnDOT org chart, while still actually at that time the Department of Highways, shows the chief engineer as the head of the Engineering Services Division, and that division was below the deputy commissioner level and the assistant commissioner level in the org chart. And then in 1972, there was a position titled deputy commissioner and chief engineer. MnDOT was actually created in 1976. The title of chief engineer was missing from the 1976, 79, and 1980 org charts. And then in 1989, the deputy commissioner and chief engineer titled and was used consistently until 2007. At least 30 other states have a chief engineer title. The level in their org charts of the title ranges from deputy commissioner to roughly the equivalent of an office director. And in the past, we have at MnDOT have had two separate deputies, one of whom was the chief engineer, and one served a more administrative type role. And that's worked well in the past, and under this legislation, we would not be able to use that model anymore. And we also feel that this legislation could limit a commissioner's ability to select from the widest pool of possible candidates. And that concludes my remarks, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, and I believe there are some other people in the audience who would like to testify on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Any questions for Mr. Rudin? Is there other Senator Saltzman?
If I might. So did I hear you say, Mr. Rudin, that until 2007 the deputy commissioner and chief engineer was the title, that the deputy commissioner was referred to as the chief engineer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, actually from 1989 until 2007, that's correct. And before that, it really varies year to year and commissioner to commissioner as to how the department has been structured. But it has been the practice since 1989 until last year that the the deputy commissioner role and the chief engineer were the same person.
So to that point, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman, Mr. Rudin, how, and I want to try to follow this logic, but you have a, you say the deputy commissioner was also the chief engineer. Is that correct?
Correct.
Even though they weren't a licensed engineer?
Mr. Chair, I believe for that time from 89 through 07, the deputy commissioner chief engineer would have been a licensed engineer.
Oh, okay. So then this just reverts back to the practice that we've been doing until 07. Is that correct, Mr.?
That'd be correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. That's looks like we're just passing a law to kind of put into line what our past practice has been. Let's take some other testimony. Mr. Rudin, thank you very much. Ms. Loverow, you want to go first, and Mr. Vanasek, join us at the table. Ms. Loverow, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Loverow, and I'm the Association of Minnesota Counties Transportation Policy Analyst. And the county engineers brought this to my policy committee and were very supportive of this initiative, and AMC does support this bill.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Vanasek, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Inter-County Association. And likewise, our board of directors voted at their last meeting to support this legislation and supports the position taken by the County Engineers Association.
All right, thank you. Further questions from any of the testifiers? Senator Dave.
Mr. Chairman, are all county engineers engineers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, yes, they are.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble?
Yeah, I do know that the Director of Public Works in the City of Minneapolis is required to be a licensed engineer.
Well, I know the city engineer in Red Wing is required to be an engineer. Further discussion, seeing none, Senator Salk, Senator Carlson.
And Senator Murphy and committee members, as the person that is a professional engineer at this table, I practice professional engineering for a little more than 20 years, and my purpose for supporting this is this code of ethics. It requires engineers to act in prescribed ways and follow prescribed ethics, but also in public engineering, all drawings must be signed by a licensed engineer. And it's not just an engineer, it's a licensed engineer. A licensed engineer requires two tests and a five-year engineer in training period, plus references from other engineers. So this is a level of engineer that has put their career on the line every time that they sign a drawing. And in the case of state law, in most states, that's a requirement that you have a professional license to be able to sign on public drawings, just like an architect must be a licensed architect for public buildings. So this is something that, for me, it's a very important issue, and it is the kind of thing that puts people's careers on the line when they give an opinion, and they give an opinion upward. I don't know that we need to require the commissioner to have it. I see that there are some states that do have PEs as commissioners. But what we need to do is make sure that the engineering opinions that reach that commissioner are of a very high quality.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chair, well, first of all, I don't have a problem with having an engineer in the transportation department. I think we probably did up until I think it was Difford that left. That I think Doug Difford was the last engineer there.
Yes.
But I mean, there's a code of ethics for politicians too, and I've served with a few that went to prison, or jail. I just I hope that we don't try to micromanage it. I don't have, when I'm dealing with somebody in the Department of Transportation, I don't care whether they're an engineer or they're a road grader. I would hope that they are honest with me and tell me the truth, and they live by a code that is relatively good. And I can remember once that somebody told me this, and this would be good for, or maybe our good attorneys here would know this, but somebody once told me that the Attorney General doesn't have to be an attorney in the state of Minnesota, that anybody can run for that position and then and run a department and go out and do things. And anyway, that's my comment.
Senator Day, Ms. Berezovsky is going to check that out.
Okay. I might be wrong.
My left-handed legal counsel says that you are correct.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
No, Senator Lang said.
One difference is that they have to be elected, and it would be brought out that they are not an attorney, and then we would have the opportunity to vote against them. That isn't the case with commissioners or deputy commissioners.
Further testimony?
Mr. Chair, I think it's also important to note that, you know, Senator Day, if you don't care who you talk to in MnDOT, I think that when we come to our bridges, I certainly want to make sure that someone who is highly skilled is signing off on that bridge. And the code of ethics is here to just reflect that they serve the public. They serve the public. They don't serve politicians. And that's important, I think, for us to note, that we have someone within the department who, and I am not insinuating that someone is not telling us what they need to tell us, but I think it's important for us to have access to a person at on the very top of that agency who's not only skilled but understands what their role is.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Saltzman, I know you've been here just for a short period of time, but in my 17 years, I've never had anybody mislead me ever out of the Department of Transportation, no matter if they were engineers, unengineers, department, or whatever. Nobody has ever misled me. If they had, I will tell you, I would be standing on the table. So, but I don't mind it. We have hire some engineers. We should probably do this with other organizations, because I've been on some other committees that I wouldn't mind that we would have some okay in some of the hirings in some of our other divisions. So,
Senator Colt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman. I had sort of two-part question, one maybe for staff. I'm wondering, currently, as a licensed engineer, sign off on all bridges? And then secondly, was it a licensed engineer that signed off on the design of the 35W bridge?
Senator Koch, yes, it was in both cases. The chief bridge inspector, Mr. Dorgan, is a licensed engineer, as are the vast majority of people that work for Mr. Dorgan. And, yes, it was a professional engineer that signed off on the design of the new I-35W bridge.
So, Mr. Chair, actually, I was referring to the previous design.
The previous design was designed by a guy that followed a general around named MacArthur and built most of the bridges that were fought on in Korea and the Philippines, and he was also licensed. As a matter of fact, they give an award away every year. Am I right, Mr. Martini? They give an award away every year that has his name on it for, I guess it's the top honors that an engineer could get. Is that correct?
That may be. I've never won it, so.
Oh,
well, I'm not aware.
Well, let's get your application in.
Yeah, I guess.
So, is that?
That's exactly
okay.
What I know. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had a question. It's a little bit like that, and I don't know if Mr. Rudin is able to answer that, but I don't know anything about the background of this. Is it the current Deputy Commissioner, Lisa Fries? If you could, mm-hmm. And whether she had the authority to sign off, that she has authority to sign off on.
Let's
on
take some testimony here. Please, name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Leslie Vermillion. I'm the Scott County Public Works Director, and I am not a registered engineer, so I'm here to speak a little bit against the proposed legislative change. I think that the position that you're talking about is a very high-level position that has more to do with leadership and vision and where we're headed than the day-to-day engineering of a department that we're talking about. In my mind, as Senator Carlson raised, the people that are actually doing the design at the lowest level should be working with the engineering aspects. Mm-hmm. And if there's issues, they're elevated up to the division directors to deal with, in my experience having worked at MnDOT for several years. I had several encounters with the deputy commissioner when I was at MnDOT working on major projects in the South Metro area, mm-hmm. and all of them related to policy decisions. Do you appeal municipal consent? Mm-hmm. Will you come down and talk to the Mystic Lake with us because they're a foreign mm-hmm. nation? They didn't have anything to do with engineering issues, but having the vision and the leadership to know where this was going. Mm-hmm. That's how our county board has decided to move our position forward. In response to the Code of Ethics, you can take a look and you can take the American Institute of Certified Planners Code of Ethics, which Ms. Fries is a member of. Mm-hmm. It looks almost verbatim similar to the Code of Ethics for the engineers.
Well, we're, public this safety. Is not about Ms. Fries.
No, I know it's not. Mm-hmm. But what I'm talking about is what I want to get to is that I think that the deputy commissioner level can come from multifunctional areas at MnDOT. Mm-hmm. We're talking about administration. We're talking about auditing. We're talking about civil rights compliance, data collection, worker safety, all the things that I've listed here. I think the leadership in that could come from a planner. It could come from an engineer. It could potentially come from a freight expert, somebody in public admin, or an attorney even if it was the right person. So I don't know why we would ever want to limit our pool of talent that we are going to select the leaders of our state from. And I guess that's what I wanted to say today.
Thank you. Senator Olson, I think you had a question for Mr. Rudin. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, the current deputy commissioner is a transportation planning professional. She has 25 years of experience in many areas of transportation, from project management, program delivery, environmental review, transportation planning and policy, transit planning and operations, performance measurement, capital programming at city, county, and state levels of government. She is not a licensed engineer, so if there's somebody that needs to sign off on, for example, a bridge plan, that would be, as the chair said, Mr. Dorgan, or his supervisor, Mr. Arnebeck, or Bob Winter, who's the director of district operations. So we do have other people within the agency who have the ability to sign off on technical plans.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudin, it is correct, according to your chart, that there were no people in an assistant commissioner level in terms of the hierarchy of your organizational chart. It moved from the deputy right down to division heads.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson,
so it would be somebody at the division head that was then had the authority to function even without a label as the chief engineer and sign off on these kinds of things. Did you have anybody in that organization after Mr. Dorgan left that fulfilled that role or carried that title or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, you're asking after Deputy Commissioner Difford left?
Difford, yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, since Deputy Commissioner Difford has moved on to the private sector, the role of chief engineer to sign off on those plans has been fulfilled by not just a single person, but as I mentioned, Mr. Arnebeck or Mr. Winter or some of the other division directors who are certified engineers.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And once again, this is not about Ms. Fries. This is not an indictment on anything that she has or has not done. That's clearly not it. But, Senator Olson, I'm not all that particularly thrilled with when something happens inside a division that the people that get chastised for it are people like Mr. Winter, who didn't know that Ms. Morphew was let's say absconding with some of the public's money and trust. But he was chastised, and a letter of discipline was entered into his personnel file, as well as a couple other people here on this list. And, you know, that's just plain not right. The buck stops up at the top.
Yeah,
not down in here. The buck stops up here.
I didn't
here.
Get what you were referring to. The went into the file on who? Is that the one that was running around the country?
Yes, that was exactly the one,
okay.
Senator Olson. So anyway. No, this is not about Ms. Fries at all, and I think that we can, if Senator Saltzman would be amenable to putting an effective date on the bill. We could put it effective 2 years from now, and then nobody, then Ms. Freeze can continue and serve out the rest of the term under the current administration, and then...
If that's, we don't know what that's going to be. Mr. Chairman, there, we don't know what might happen under the acting or whatever's coming next year, correct?
Next year. No, I'm talking about after the next election.
Yes. No.
If we put the effective date 2 years out and then...
At our next election. Or in the next governor's
election.
That would
be the governor's election as well, right.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Would that be acceptable? I think that we need to do it right now. That's just my opinion. But if it's the will of the committee to put an effective date on it from 2 years from today...
Well, my concern, Mr. Chair, if you might, is that... We've had discussions about the fact that there has not been a chief engineer for several months, and I think we've sent a message to MnDOT at some of these meetings that we were concerned about that. And the fact that we, you know, find out that, you know, the deputy commissioner was an engineer for a matter of probably 20 years, and when that position was vacated, there was not an attempt to somewhere within the upper administration have a chief engineer designated, does concern me. If I knew that we put an effective date of 2010 and that the administration would attempt to correct that, but to go 2 years without a chief engineer when we have put significant money into MnDOT and we're going to be doing some major construction projects, I believe that we're guilty of then saying the status quo is okay while we do these plans. That is my concern. This bill is about common sense. You know, if we had continued on the path of having an engineer at the top of this agency, but the past year there's been a lapse of judgment, I believe. And that's why we have to come forward with the bill to sort of set the record that this is what I expect, or I hope we expect, of this highly technical committee.
Mr. Chair,
and Senator Olson, just so you know, this is not about Ms. Freeze, period. It's not about Mr. McFarland. It's not. I wanted it to be the commissioner, to be an engineer, the commissioner, because then I believe that outside of Senator Carlson, I'm looking around the table, and that would take all the political people out of it. Because I'm tired of having politics inserted into transportation policy. And it does happen. And, you know, granted, some of it comes out of this table right here.
No kidding.
Yeah. Most of the time it's in response to something. Mr. Rudine's laughing at me now, so maybe I should just go away. But, Senator Olson, we're all stymied by this. I mean, there's been, in my opinion, and here's where I'm at, Senator Olson, and this is why I'm ground right to the bone. Highway 52, the Toward Zero Death Corridor, guess where the deaths are happening? They're happening in Goodhue County. Guess how many at-grade intersections that we have in Goodhue County that have been upgraded to an interchange? Zero. Guess how many of those at-grade crossings have money identified for an interchange? One. Out of all the ones along there that either need to be closed or upgraded, one. How many in Dakota County, how many at-grade crossings on Highway 52, you know, south of 494, are there on Highway 52 in Dakota County? None. They've all been fixed. Olmsted County, how many at-grade crossings? There's one, and they're going to have that one fixed in the next, I think, construction cycle, I believe. And that's at the city of Orono. Now,
Orinoco, Mr. Chairman.
Orinoco, I'm sorry. Orono's out your neck of the woods.
I was going to say, huh?
But, and for the life of me, and I hope nobody from MnDOT here takes offense to this, for the life of me, I can't figure out why that is. Because if somebody's dying in Dakota County, that's a tragedy just like it is in Goodhue County. And when I looked at the numbers and the trips and the number of cross trips across the highway, there was not that much difference. Not that much difference. But guess whose district got X'd out? That's the kind of politics I'm talking about. I want a chief engineer, and I want one tomorrow, period. Senator Colt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sultan, perhaps I might offer a compromise to get a chief engineer as a possibility now, as well as not feel like people are being targeted. If we actually removed, well, we could either remove the final 1.10 to 1.12, so that would revert to previous statute, which would allow for more, it would allow for some flexibility at the deputy commissioner level, because right now we're taking out.
Change it back to existing language.
I'm sorry, what are you changing?
We're limiting no more than two, we're saying no more than two of these positions shall be at the deputy commissioner level. And we're removing that now. So does that mean that only one could be at the deputy commissioner level? Mm-hmm. So could we just reinstate that language or take it out of this amendment so it remains at current law? And then we could have a chief engineer / deputy commissioner appointed as well as continue on with the current structure?
Senator Olsen, you had a comment you wanted to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm inclined to agree with Senator Saltzman. For those of us who have served on county boards and maybe were on the road and bridge committees, worked with engineers, you know, we see they are very multifunctional people. At the county level, they're managing budgets, they're managing staff, they're doing all of these things, multiplied many times at the state level, of course. But I really respect what they bring to the table. Like Senator Carlson, I mean, when we toured the bridge site, he's filming the thing so we can go back and make sure it's all being done right. You know, I have a lot of respect for what an engineer can bring to the table. So I would be more in favor of moving towards an engineer earlier rather than later.
Okay. I think Senator Koch is probably going to have an amendment to offer up here in a few minutes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, part of my, do we have any idea what Acting Commissioner McFarland plans to do? You know, we could go to essentially, if you go to two deputy commissioners, remember, we've already laid an extra strain on the budget by taking, we now have to pay for a commissioner as well as a lieutenant governor. We didn't have both of those on the plate. And that this top organization has been relatively lean in terms of what's been authorized by law. And I do recall, and I hate to bring politics in it, but there's been any number of attempts over the past several years when we've had budget to try to kind of wipe out the governor's unclassified positions for assistant and deputy commissioners. Is that going to be a budget effort this time again? So are we just kind of...
Are you endorsing that plan, Senator Olsen?
Well, but if that's going to be the effort, then what are we playing with this? There wouldn't be any positions in the first place. So, but I just go back to where I started. We haven't even heard whether he plans to change the structure. And why might he not?
So to that point, Senator Olsen.
Senator Olsen.
And again, we don't know what that continuance is going to be or what's going to happen in terms of the next commissioner. I liked your idea of the delaying it to 2010.
Well, Senator Olsen, that was not my idea.
Oh,
that was somebody else's idea, but I just happened to
you mouthed it.
Throw it out there.
You know, so I'll go back to the intent. What my intent is to ensure that there is a licensed engineer in the as either a deputy commissioner. However the new commissioner wants to structure the rest of his or her cabinet is up to them. But I believe what this legislation says is that if we pass this, we believe it is important that the deputy commissioner be a licensed professional engineer.
Okay,
that's the intent. Now,
Senator Saltzman, you said
Senator Saltzman.
Mm-hmm. I just want to finish up by saying that it's important that the deputy commissioner, we go back to what was in place for 20 years, that the deputy commissioner is a licensed professional engineer. However else the new or acting commissioner wants to organize their cabinet or their appointments is entirely up to them. But the deputy commissioner needs to be a professional licensed engineer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we've taken away the fact that a planner can serve within that cabinet or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. That's not being taken away. But this is a statement on our respect for that profession and the fact we believe it's very important, especially in this time when we are investing millions of dollars in the infrastructure of this state.
Mm-hmm. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, you confused me when you started out that you said either, but you didn't put an or. So it was either it was going to be this deputy commissioner, and then what's the alternative? You use that word either, and that's usually followed by an or. What was the option that you were referring to?
Senator Saltzman.
I started out the sentence wrong, Senator Olson.
Let's do this. Senator Koch, let's hear the amendment that you
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I would move is to amend this bill by striking on line 1.9, starting at the commissioner, all the way through to one, for the rest of the bill, to 1.12, through 1.12. And what that would do is, in effect, allow for, as my understanding, is sort of two deputy commissioner positions. Obviously, the administrations may decide to stay with just one, but it would allow some flexibility in this case, still requiring that one of those positions be filled by the licensed engineer. And perhaps that might be a compromise, Mr. Chair.
It could be. Senator Koch, I think Ms. Bierzowski needs to read the amendment so that we've got it exactly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.8, delete, period, the deputy commissioner slash chief engineer and insert who. Then on lines 1.10 to 1.12, delete the new language and restore the stricken language.
Thank you, Ms. Bierzowski, for catching that. Yes.
Okay, and so Ms. Bierzowski, then the effect of that would be to authorize another deputy commissioner, but one would have to be the licensed engineer. Senator Saltzman?
I can live with that. Is there a fiscal impact then? Or, I mean, is this establishing an additional position within?
Yes.
I'm willing to do that if the others at the table believe that is the direction we want to go.
Mr. Rudin, now that MnDOT has roughly $400 million more dollars a year, do you think you can afford one more deputy commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I can answer that question, but as I said in my earlier remarks, the model that we're discussing here was used previously, I believe during the Carlson administration, where we had two deputy engineers and one was a licensed engineer and the other was not.
Perfect. Senator Koch?
Well, and Mr. Chair, as I understand it, my amendment would not say that they would have to have the two. They would just revert to the old language where they could.
They could have two.
It's a little more flexible.
But
one must be. So if they only have one, then the one is an engineer.
Senator Koch, I think you came up with a really good idea.
And there is the May word in there. I did see that. It's May established, so that is at the discretion.
Great. Further discussion? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just a little slow because is there a limit then to how many deputies there can be? I wouldn't want to be able to have like five deputies.
Senator Olson, Ms. Bierzowski tells me we're reinstating that stricken language down there on lines 11 and 12. No more than two of these positions shall be at the deputy commissioner level.
Thank you.
Two. That's it. Okay. Does everybody understand the Koch Amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Now, is there anybody that's in disagreement with this bill yet? Good. We did great work today. Thank you, Senator Saltzman and Senator Koch. Senator Saltzman moves Senate File 2925 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred to State Government Operations. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed.
Aye.
Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, committee, for your
Thank you. Senator Dahl, you're up next. You have a constituent here. Or there is a constituent from out of town, I believe.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm hoping we get through this a little bit quicker. Half of this committee is supposed to go to the Energy Committee, and next we can't get any work done up there. So hopefully this one will go pretty smooth.
Senator Dahl, Senate File 3372.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 3372 is really a bill for safe, accessible parking for our disabled population.
Senator Dahl, you have a delete yes, all amendment. We need to adopt that so that we're working off the correct language.
I have a delete all amendment.
Senator Dahl moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye. 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 Opposed. Aye. Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl, please explain the A2 amendment.
What this does is it is on the Home Rule Charter for Cities and that enacted an ordinance establishing a permit program for long-term disability parking. The city enacts the ordinance, a permit program for long-term disability parking must establish a minimum, these is a minimum, one, a limitation on disability parking to a maximum of 4 hours during the hours of enforcement on the 1 hour, 90-minute, and 2 hour parking meters. Two, requirement for the city parking lots and ramps to provide a 50% discount on monthly fees for contracted parkers with disabilities with the appropriate vehicle identification who park in designated disability parking spaces, and three, the issuance of a special needs permit for an employed person with severe disabilities for an all-day on-street parking permit that will accommodate that person's needs. That's the provisions of the bill. I have Margot Imdick Cross, I pronounced her name wrong, and she would like to share a few thoughts on this bill.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Margot Imdick Cross, and I'm an accessibility specialist with the Minnesota State Council on Disability.
Ms. Cross, thanks for coming back to our committee.
Thank you for having me. Disability parking is critically important to thousands of individuals with disabilities who have difficulty walking or use mobility devices and who need to shop, work, play, attend school, visit doctor's offices, and be able to get around their community. Currently, according to federal census data, approximately 20% of the population of this nation has a disability as defined by law, and 60% of those individuals have some form of mobility impairment. The simple goal of accessible parking is to get people with mobility disabilities to their destination safely. For many individuals with mobility disabilities, the closest, safest place to park is at the parking meter. Mm-hmm. Disability parking language has been in statute since 1953, and up until 2003, this language had always allowed individuals with disabilities to park at meters without paying the meter and without regard to time limit. Many individuals with disabilities cannot get to the meter, and many others don't have the finger strength or dexterity to insert the coins. In regard to time limits, in many instances, it takes an individual with a mobility disability longer to get in and out of their vehicle, longer to get to their destination, mm-hmm. and longer to accomplish the task than it does their non-disabled peers. Mm-hmm. In 2003, the city of Minneapolis imposed a four-hour maximum time limit for people with mobility disabilities on all of their 1 and 2 hour parking meters. Disability advocates met for 18 months prior to the restrictions going into effect to negotiate protections for persons who needed accessible parking. In doing so, the city agreed to some allowances so that the people with mobility disabilities didn't lose their jobs and would be able to park in municipal ramps and lots. The city also provided for special permits to meet the needs of individuals who had specific access issues. In 2005, the city of St. Paul followed suit and instituted the same parking restrictions and also the same provisions. Duluth and Rochester have also restricted parking for individuals with disabilities. Unfortunately, in these cities, the time limits are overly restrictive. Duluth has a 2 hour limit in certain sections of downtown, and Rochester has restricted disability parking to whatever the time limit is on the meter. In 2007, In June of 2007, our 21-member governor-appointed statewide council unanimously passed a resolution that supported the creation of uniformity and the establishment of minimum guidelines in these parking programs. In December of 2007, our council voted to make this issue a legislative priority. The bill before you would establish minimum guidelines that would create uniformity throughout the state when or if a city decided to restrict on-street metered parking. This bill serves to protect the rights and independence of individuals with disabilities who need to rely on on-street metered parking to get around their community. I urge your support of Senate File 3372. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cross. This seems to be pretty straightforward, kind of put everybody on the level playing field so that people that are going from, say, Thief River Falls to the Mayo Clinic, that the rules are the same, whether they are at a clinic in at Regions and in the metropolitan area or at the Mayo Clinic or even in Duluth. So,
exactly.
Is there anybody who wants to testify against this bill? I don't see any.
Mr. Chair, then, I would move to recommend this 3372 be recommended to pass and referred to
State and local
government.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dahl has moved that Senate File 3372 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Governance. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair
you.
Members.
Thank you.
Next up, I believe we have Senator Rest.
First.
Senator Rest moves Senate File 3368. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 3368 provides that the Department of Public Safety employees, deputy registrars, etc., are not liable for mistake or negligence in disseminating information classified by statute concerning drivers or vehicles. Right now, as I understand it, the current law provides that the commissioner or deputy registrars for DVS employees are not liable to any persons for mistake or negligence in the giving of information not willfully calculated to injure that person, but it is limited to registration information. And the proposal is to expand the provision in the way in which I just indicated, so that it's all with regard to all motor vehicle and driver license statutes. Mr. Chairman, this is an agency bill. Ms. McCormick is here to testify about why this is preferable, and then the bill needs to go to Judiciary.
Ms. McCormick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And the department is requesting that this be expanded to cover motor vehicle and driver license data. And what we're talking about, as Senator Rest said, is inadvertently providing information, or there could possibly be an error in the information that they are providing the individual, and so that in those particular cases, either the division staff or the staff that are agents that work for us, which would include driver's license agents and deputy registrars, would be held harmless in that case or exemption from liability. When I talk about this, I want to make sure that The committee understands that we're not excusing anyone that would or saying they aren't liable if for any reason it's done for any willful purpose. In addition to that, we have, as you all know, there were recent incidents where data was accessed by individuals. And in cases like that, we already have a policy that staff must sign on a yearly basis that goes into great detail, and the staff are trained in terms of the proper use of data and the data privacy laws that exist that we must all comply with. They sign a statement that they have read it, they have taken the training, and they know that if they don't abide by that, that they could be disciplined or up to and including termination. And so we're not talking about that kind of access where it's willful or they have been trained and they understand and have signed for it. We're talking about where there may be an error in the data and it's given out. In addition to that, as all of you know, we also certainly have tort claims where if there's some problem with the data that those individuals may request that they receive compensation for those errors. Nothing is changing in terms of that particular statute with the with driver and vehicle services.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, can you give us a little bit of the context for this new language? Did some situation arise that drew attention or your attention to the fact that there was, you know, a policy shift or policy language or statutory language that had to be put in place?
Mr. Chair and
Ms.
Senator
Lovell.
No, this was just us reviewing our statutes and looking for ways that we may need to ensure that we're consistently handling practices across the division. There was no particular situation that this was developed for.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Ms. McCormick, so can you give us an example? I know you had talked a little bit in broader terms. Can you give us a specific example where this would apply?
Mr. McCormick. Chair and Senator Moi, it might apply in the sense that one of our a call could come in to, for instance, one of our customer contact staff in the driver evaluation unit where they would look at the record and they may provide information saying that their license was valid, and in case we may have had an instance, for instance, where the information did not bridge accordingly from the court system to our driving system, so that their license may not have been valid that day when we said that it might have been valid. That would be an example where it could be there's a technology change that what didn't get accomplished that day, and then we would get a letter, a complaint stating that they had been given misinformation and they were driving as a result and maybe have been ticketed for that purpose.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Senator Ress renews her motion to move Senate File 3368 for...
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 3368 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. It has been passed. Senator Rest has also Senate File 3201.
Yes, Senator Mr. Rest. Chairman, this bill also... if it is acted on favorably, needs to go to the Judiciary Committee because it involves some criminal penalties, among other things. And this is also an agency bill dealing with updating the Minnesota's laws to the federal regulations with regard to commercial driver's licenses. And Ms. McCormick can explain some of the technicalities if you're interested in hearing them. But I think first and foremost, what they're trying to do is to have our CDL come into compliance with the federal regulations and responding to an audit of the CDL program to make sure that the deficiencies that were noted in that audit are satisfied. It also eliminates a conflict, and Ms. McCormick can speak to that, between two sections of the statute. It also provides the state patrol with authority to enforce out-of-service regulations, keeping unsafe drivers off the roads. And it, in one big section of it, will require commercial drivers to report withdrawals, convictions to their employers, who can then prevent them from driving illegally. And by doing so, we will have enhanced public safety. The supporters of this bill, besides DOT, are and obviously Department of Public Safety here, Minnesota State Patrol, and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. If you'd like more detail than that at this point, we certainly can go into it. Or if you have any questions, what would you like?
Thank you, Senator Rest. I'm going to make an announcement here that the full Senate is going back into session at 4 o'clock, so we're going to try to move along rather rapidly. Senator Olsen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I think this will be directed to you under Section 3. I think it must be 3.9, where you talk about Class C driver's licenses. Now, I had a talk with Captain Urquhart, and I think I might not be understanding this correctly, but the way I read it, a Class C license is going to be able to have a passenger endorsement and a school bus endorsement and operate any kind of school bus with a Class C license. That's how I read that. Is that correct or incorrect?
You already can do that, right?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, I think you're essentially correct there. It is adding a passenger endorsement. Ms. McCormick can, of course, respond to the impact it has on school buses.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, again, for the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. Yes, you are correct, Senator, that for the Class C license, during our audit, it was brought out that we would need to ensure that the Class C drivers would, if they would want to be operating a school bus, they would need to have a passenger endorsement and a school bus endorsement. And there are probably about 20 Class C drivers that would need to be taking tests in order to get that passenger endorsement so that we can comply with federal regulations. And so that would be why that specifically says, because the Class C drivers in these cases, when they did take their test, they took a test using a small school bus, and we need to ensure that anyone that has that is driving a school bus must have both the passenger endorsement and the school bus endorsement. And so that would make that particular change, and that was the change that was recommended in the audit by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I'm concerned that it opens up a whole can of worms that somebody could be operating a type C or D school bus with a C license. And
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, they would
Ms.
only
McCormick.
Be able to do it if they are retested, and that means that they have to be tested in a school bus that has over 16 passengers. So they would need to be retested. the people that right now have that endorsement will either, if this bill passes into law, they will either have to be downgraded to a Class D license, or they will have to take the passenger endorsement and be tested with a vehicle that holds 16 passengers or more, and that's in order to come into compliance with federal law. So there, as I said, there's only a few that, in this case, that applies to 20 people. And from going forward, then that would be our position going forward, that both of those endorsements must be met in order to drive any school buses.
Senator Olsen.
So I'm I guess I'm pretty concerned about that language, because going into the future, wouldn't somebody with a C license be able to get a passenger endorsement and then a school bus endorsement and end up driving a 90-passenger pusher without the requirements of a B license? That's what I'm concerned about, going in, not these 20 people, but moving into the future.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, I think I'm not being clear then. No, they would not be able to. We are just trying to put that language in there to address the 20 school bus drivers now that have Class C licenses, and saying in those particular cases they would have to have that test so that they could continue to operate a school bus. That isn't what we are meaning, that you need to have that Class B license otherwise.
Senator Rest, if we may. there's no one better at reading these laws than you, and to me that says in the future, then, reading this with a Class C license, you can't, because we're not saying, except for these people that we're talking about, these 20 people, it's laying out that with a Class C driver's license, with a passenger endorsement and school bus endorsement, operating school bus, you know, so that means that they can operate, as I'm reading it, that's saying they could.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, but the language about the design to transport 15 and fewer passengers, including the driver, is eliminated, and that's how we get around that. At least that's what I've been told by our staff, because that means then they have to have the school bus endorsement, and then they would have to have a Class B license. Because the only reason those Class C drivers now have a Class C license and are driving it is because they were able to drive school buses, the small school buses that had under 15 passengers. And now the way our law reads, you have to have, for the school bus endorsement, you have to be able to drive a vehicle that has over 16 passengers.
It took me a while.
Senator Olsen.
So does that make it clear?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's a better, although it, to me it seems like it might be easier just to have them take a B test.
Change the law.
Any questions from the committee? Anyone here to speak in opposition?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
I would move that Senate File 3201 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Senator Rest moves Senate File 3201 to pass and be forwarded to Judiciary. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Thank you. And with that, we're going to lay over Senate File 3419, Senator Larson's bill, and we're going to adjourn for the day. Thank you.
I wasn't quite getting that.
I hope you guys appreciated that I finally emptied my folder.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. I had a few extra minutes, and I went in there, and I don't know. Yeah.
Alex is doing it.
Well, sometimes both. Girls are calls and wants to know something about it. Or so have it in writing.
Well, he understands. Hey. So I need to go. I need to do that. With something you know.
Yeah.
Which one of those is your priority?
You heard about this issue with the bad checks.
Hit him with a ball peen.
Yeah.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
In some.
Yeah. It seems to me that that's not doing enough.
We have session.
Yeah.
Did everything else go okay?
Yeah. We laid over Larson.
So let me
which segment not issuing a driver's license next summer, right? First. Because the president.